right, hello and welcome to the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I am joined by my brother, Barney. How are you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, very good, man. Enjoyed the last weekend, all the action. How did you enjoy it, being in Lisbon, catching a few games?
Yeah, brilliant. I just got back today, actually. It is pouring with rain outside. I've been back in London for about 2 hours and it is absolutely pouring with rain. I've been in sunny Lisbon for 2 weeks, if you can believe it, which is a great treat. But I managed to catch some football at the weekend. Yeah, it was great. The best game was Estrela at home to Gil Vicente, a must-win game for them to survive, and they won 1-0. Which was really, really brilliant. It was a first half goal, I believe. Really good atmosphere, 7,000 people in the stadium, packed out stadium, brilliant atmosphere. And I also went to Sporting in the evening. That was really fun. They beat Chaves 3-0. And then I went to the Women's Taça de Portugal final at the Estádio de Jamor, which was really amazing experience. So yeah, I had a great weekend. Well, I had a great 2 weeks, but a great weekend of football last weekend, definitely.
I think the Australia game was nice. It must have been good because it was sort of in their hands, isn't it? If they knew that they would win, that was it. Whereas like the Bovish and Portland, you know, a few things could go against them.
Yeah,
it was a drama, good... actually.
And great drama. And all the news was coming through the whole time because there was all these goals happening in other places. Mm. But obviously when Australia were winning, that was kind of... They're good because they knew that it didn't really matter what happened, but it was only 1-0, so it was a bit nervous at times. But once it got to about 88th minute, people started to celebrate. I thought it was a bit premature because I was like, listen, everything can happen here. You know, it was 2 minutes of normal time plus 4 minutes of stoppage time to play. But no, it turned out really great in the end. And I did actually do some recording from the stadium of all three games. So keep your eyes peeled on your podcast feed because I'll put out a live from the match podcast for all those games probably sometime in the next couple of weeks. We're going to get through these next two episodes first because these are really big episodes. Actually, that does bring me nicely, Barney, onto today's episode, which is definitely one of our biggest episodes of the season. In fact, the next two episodes are going to be pretty much our two biggest episodes of the season. Next week is going to be our end of season awards show where we're going to be dishing out such awards as player of the season, young player of the season, manager of the season, a few other little awards as well. And we'll be talking about our team of the season plus a team of the season made up of players from outside of the top four. So that's going to be great next week. But this week is going to be a bit of a marathon. So strap yourselves in because we are going to do our traditional end of season review show where we talk about every single team in the Primeira Liga from top to bottom, talk about how their season went, what were the positives, what were the negatives, and what can we expect from them next season. So this is going to be an in-depth podcast talking about the season as a whole. Me and Barney have done a lot of work ahead of this one, so hopefully you enjoy it. And just a reminder, as always, you know, this is such a big part of the season and the football's finished now. So if you've listened to us over the season and enjoyed it and you want to do something to give something back, we would very much appreciate a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, a star rating on Spotify, sharing the podcast on your social media or with friends is a really, really valuable thing for us. You know, we've grown this podcast pretty much through word of mouth, so we cannot tell you how valuable that is. And if you've really, really enjoyed the show over the whole season, I know you'd have heard me say this a few times, but now is definitely the time to consider becoming a Long Ball Football Socio on our Patreon page. It only costs £1 and it gives you such benefits as a weekly bonus podcast preview show, access to our Patreon Predictions League, and monthly watch alongs. And although the season's ended, so the bonus preview shows and the Predictions League is over, we are about to do two watch alongs in a week as we host watch alongs for both legs of the relegation playoff. So for just £1, you can get involved in those and be part of the Long Ball football community. That was a bit of a mouthful. Let's get on with the podcast at hand because we've got an awful lot to get through. But as we did last season, Barney, now is the time to react. And I don't think either of us can remember what we said at this point before the season started, but we are going to react to our predictions that we made at the beginning of the season. Now, a lot of podcasts won't do this. They want to, save some face. They don't want to admit when they got things wrong. We're going to air our dirty laundry in public. You're going to hear what we thought at the beginning of the season. We probably got a lot of this very wrong. We predicted a lot of stuff, starting with predicting our top six. So what I'm going to do now is play a clip for you of starting with Barney, actually, starting with Barney's top six, and then we're going to come back and see how close it was to reality. So yeah, let's listen to that now.
Sticking with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, my top six are Benfica, Braga, Porto, and Sporting. Then in the other European spots, Vitória and Estoril Praia. So look,
Interesting.
things I've got to say quickly. It's the
Barney's
same
on the
top.
Estoril hype train.
I am on the Estoril hype train. I am actually. I think I don't know. I just.
There you go.
Oh wow.
All right, so should we just recap what that was? So Benfica in first, Braga in second, was it Porto in third, Sporting fourth, and then Vitória in fifth? That's a good one. And Estoril in sixth, which I think it's fair to say you weren't alone in that. Where should we start? Braga in second. This brings me back, Barney. It just brings me back to the hype around Braga after their transfer window.
Well, yeah, that was it. I just got so caught up, as did so many people in Braga's transfer window. I think we'll talk about more in a little bit, but yeah,
Yeah.
I was completely blinded. I think I was, I think that's all coming from the hope of. Of like disruption to the big three. Like I felt like Braga, after their season before, I was hoping they could continue that trajectory. But yeah, I was so shocked when I heard that. And also like because that we'd done that on game week two, didn't we? Jornada two. So I think
Yeah.
in that first week we just had Benfica lose to Boavista.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah.
Arouca just smashed Estoril 4-3. Porto had beat Morens to be fair. Let's see what Braga's was. And
Didn't they
Braga
lose
had
to
lost to
Famalicão? Yeah. I remember
Famalicão.
that. I remember that. Yeah.
There you
And
go.
well, I mean, it's important to remember that we were coming off the back of Benfica's season under Roger Schmidt, where they'd won the league, they looked really good, they'd signed some great players. So the Benfica hype was pretty real as well. That's why I think we both had them in first. But look, let's not tease you anymore. Let's hear mine, because I'm sure they're just as bad.
Yeah, top six. So in order, number one, I've gone for Benfica champions, second place Porto, third place Sporting, fourth place Braga, fifth place Vitória, and sixth place Famalicão. So starting from the bottom, Famalicão are the team that I think will.
Tell you what, mate, it's not that bad.
It's not
It's
that
not that
bad. It's not as bad as
bad. Braga in fourth, I'm pleased with.
mine.
Which is funny because I thought I was quite hyped on Braga as well. I mean, mate, we've got to deal with the elephant in the room, which is that both of us got Sporting dead wrong. You know, we didn't see it coming. I guess at the time the Gyökeres signing was a risk. We didn't know who Hjulmand was. Trincão hadn't done that well. So I guess at the time it didn't necessarily look like they'd made great signings. So this is all with the benefit of hindsight. I mean, Famalicão, where did Famalicão end up? They were like
They had a
eighth.
strong second half, didn't they? But
That's an easy pick, though. I mean, that's a bit of a late. I didn't really put my neck out on the line there, did I? So,
it's not bad, though.
it's not bad. I'll take it. I think we were going to also predict our bottom three as well. So this could be bad.
Relegation, and then the bottom two are guaranteed relegation. So, who have you gone for?
I've got Estrella rock bottom, due to everyone saying it's a bit a year too early. Portimonense next, and then Boavista in the relegation playoff spot. And yeah, I think Portimonense, it could be a year too much for them. They've just been flirting with that bottom spot for a while. Boavista as well, I just think they've they're I think the difference between them and Rio Ave and their sort of lack of transfer activity is that I think they've lost two huge players in the likes of Ng and creative players like Kendry Gorey. I think that's where they're really struggle with goals this season. So I think that's why I've put them there.
Barney, that is a very, very good prediction. Three teams that were absolutely in the relegation battle for most of the season. Two of them did escape, but they were Boavista had the same points as Portimonense, and Estrela had 1 point more. So you got three teams spot on who were in the relegation battle pretty much all season. I don't think that's bad at all.
No, I feel bad on Estrela. I just gave them no chance. But
well, they escaped by 1 point, Barney. So
it's
justified.
Yeah, but not rock bottom though.
No, all right, go on. Let's play mine.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. So my bottom three are 16th Portimonense, 17th Ferenc, 18th Estrela. So I think Boavista will be probably 15th. And I think it's, again, the petit factor that will keep them up. Portimonense, I think, yeah, like you, probably one step too far. And then Ferenc and Estrela, I think Ferenc has got a pretty weak side, to be honest. I don't think there's too many Premier League quality players there. And Estrela, again, just going off the fact that they're a small team who are obviously ambitious, but perhaps this could be a bit of a big ask.
Well, all right, let's deal with the positive, shall we, Barney? I got one spot on, didn't I?
Yeah.
Portimonense in the relegation playoff.
Yeah.
Estrela, I think, is a free choice. We both picked that. Ferenc, I got that wrong. Yeah, I got that wrong. And I'm happy about that as well, because I like Ferenc. But yeah, it seems like they were quite similar. But listen, okay, so we got the top six pretty bad, but the bottom three was all pretty good.
Yeah, and you called the petit factor as well. That was, you know,
the petit factor. I mean, he's gone now, but still, his legacy lives on.
He had them top of the table at one point. Yeah.
All right, and I think we also predicted sort of top scorers, assists, players of the season, all that kind of stuff. So let's see how we got on with those.
All right, then. So the last three predictions we're going to make: top scorer, player of the season, and surprise team. Well, surprise team's a fairly easy one because I think we've both predicted that with our sixth place team. So I've gone for Famalicão. But Barney, the two big ones: top scorer and player of the season. Now, top scorer might be an easy one, but I've gone for Victor Gyökeres of Sporting. I think he's ready to have a great season. He looks like he's going to absolutely dominate in this league. And player of the season, I've gone for, there's plenty to choose from. Could have gone Angel Di Maria, but I didn't. Could have gone Pedro Gonçalves, but I didn't. I've gone for Kocu, the new Turkish playmaker from Benfica. I think he's going to be a top, top player. I think he's got that kind of Enzo Fernandez type aura about him. I think he'll be at a top club this time next year.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I've gone different though. My top goal scorer, I've gone Ricardo Horta. I just think, you know, he did it last season.
Mr. Reliable.
Mr. Reliable. He's on free kicks. He's on pens. And I think he's playing in that sort of striking superiority. He'll get goals. Best player, Albert. I've gone for Marcus Edwards. I'm really hoping this will be his season. You know, there's so much to always talk about him moving back to the Premier League at some point, but we need to see that. We need to see it from him to sort of prove that he's at that level. And I think this is going to be his year. So I've gone for Marcus Edwards to have that amazing season.
Well, there you go. Bit of a mixed bag there.
Gyökeres is a nice shout for you, especially because we didn't really know too much about him.
I'm trying to think how much we'd seen of him at that point. Interesting also that I picked Gyökeres as top scorer, but then I didn't predict Sporting to win the league or anything like that. I think I put them in third. Mm. So interesting about that. I mean, Kocu, yeah. I mean, he could do that next season, actually, you know, playing in his right position all year. And then, I mean, like, Ricardo Horta is an okay shout. And Marcus Edwards was wishful thinking,
logic.
Wasn't it?
He's on free kicks. He's on pens.
Injuries have killed him, though. Injuries have killed him. All right. Well, okay. Not as bad as it could have been. Good to know we're not completely wrong. Although some of those top six ones were pretty dodgy. But look, it's all a bit of fun. I don't think any of that was too bad. Shall we then, Barney, get into what we came here for, which is this season's recap of the Primeira Liga, every team from first place down to 18th. And let's start, as we always do, with Sporting, who finished the league as league champions in first place with 90 points, 29 wins, 3 draws, 2 losses, 96 goals scored. Those 90 points were a record points total for Sporting. 29 wins, also a record. They also won every home game in the league and set a new record of scoring in every game of the entire season. I mean, I'm rattling off the records that they broke. An incredible season, probably surpassing probably the wildest expectations of all sporting fans. They had the chance still to make it even sweeter if they win the Taça de Portugal final on Sunday. But even just this league season has been absolutely brilliant. They were comfortably the best team in the league. No other team could match them. They had the league's top scorer and probably best player in Victor Gyökeres. They had loads of great players all over the pitch. I'm not really sure where to start, Barney. I'll let you start just with your thoughts overall on sporting season.
Yeah, well, I think, and having just heard back our sort of predictions at the beginning of the season, I was, you know, I think this time last year we were talking about potential of like a period of time of Benfica dominance, right? You know, we saw that in you know, the amount of money spent on transfer, etc., and how well they performed last season. So for Sporting to be as dominant as you described then, this season, it was quite surprising. But then I think there's lots of factors that have all clicked at the right time. I think I'll start with Amorim because he's been, you know, his journey this season, and since he's won the league, actually, was it 3 seasons ago now? It's been, we've seen so much development, right? Because, you know, he's always billed as the young manager, and but he's learned so much, I think, in these years at Sporting. And I just, you know, I love the fact that at one point he's being roomed with like Liverpool and possibly even Chelsea, etc. Like these big clubs roomed with him. He's progressed so much, and we saw so many different things from him this season that we hadn't quite seen before, which I think highlights the fact that he, you know, he is always learning, he's always developing, and but he's still got his identity with this formation, and but then, you know, the players used in different positions this year. You know, thinking of the wing back positions, for example, which has, you know, really helped them. I've just loved watching his team play. I think we'll talk about signings in a bit, but in terms of him and what he's done, you know, he's shown real leadership. He's shown, like, I think, and great man management. I love the way he's used the squad. I love the way he's been ruthless enough to, you know, once again, just hearing me talk about Marcus Edwards there, you know, great player, but then Amorim's had the balls to sort of drop him and play Trincao and just really, you know, to have authority and use them to sort of fight for places, and that's all across the pitch as well in other positions. You know, one of his big things is the way he handles young players. You know, Charisma springs to mind for that example, in the fact that, you know, he got loaned out last season, didn't really think he had a chance of getting back in the squad, and yet he puts him in for one of the biggest games of the season against Porto, and Charisma pays him back with a spay like that. I think Amorim is just, yeah, he's taken it to another level this season. He's really proven, because he's always been talked of as this young Portuguese man, the next big Portuguese manager. You know, what job is he going to get? They've always been trickling, like, rumors and the talks of him, but I think this season he's really proven himself. And like you said Albert, at the beginning, the numbers are ridiculous. I think the goal difference between goals scored and goals conceded is as a higher amount than the actual goals they scored in the last time they won the league. You know, it was all about solid at the back, you know, really good defensive performances, getting a, you know, points over the line. This season was domination from them in the league. You know, they were absolutely ruthless. Tons of goals going in. Really good football. Maybe we could look at Europe, but I think in terms of just focusing on what he's done in Portugal, it just, yeah, a fan, he's just been brilliant.
Yeah, I think Sporting have had a few protagonists this season, and Amorim is definitely one of the main ones. For him, it's definitely been a season where he sort of announced himself on the international stage. You know, everyone knows Ruben Amorim's name now, basically because he's been linked with Liverpool and Manchester United. But certainly been a really, really brilliant season for him. And the phrase that you used that I think is perfect is taking it to another level. That's what Sporting have done this season compared to the last time they won the league. Unlike when they won the league in 2020, where it definitely felt like towards the end of the season, they were just trying to get over the line. You know, they were kind of, the feeling was of trepidation more than optimism. It was like, please don't mess this up. Please don't mess this up. Just win the next game. Just win the next game. You know, just get a point here so that they can get the win over the, like, the season done and dusted. Whereas this season, it was domination from beginning to end. And actually, one thing that I've been keen to talk about a lot is that they finished the season in the best form of the season so far, both as a team and in terms of the players. The players looked fitter than they had done all season. They looked sharper than they had done all season. Not a single player dropped off in form. They looked completely confident throughout. And that is absolutely why this season has been so impressive, because they've completely dominated from beginning to end. Let's go back to where the success has come from. And I think there's a few things that I've made a note of. An excellent transfer strategy in the summer, and a clear change in tactic to spend more, to invest more in the squad. You know, they made three signings for about 20 million euros each. Obviously, with the aim of selling those players on for more as well. But, you know, higher investments being made. That really paid off with Bitiokeres, really paid off with Morten Hjulmand. Actually, you could probably add Trincao to that list as well, although that deal was kind of agreed last year, that they agreed to pay 20 million euros for him, because he really became one of the best players in the team. Frisnedo, of course, is the one that didn't quite work out, although I think that deal was for more like 12 to 15 million euros. Possibly we'll come on to that in a sec. So that was the one signing that didn't quite work, but only really because of injuries. Not just the new players though, Barney, also the squad planning, you know, in the summer, building a team full of players that fit the system. Really, really good strength in depth. We'll come on and talk about the key players in a second, but there were a lot of fringe players that played their part. As you said, Eduardo Quaresma. I suppose you can add Ricardo Ejgaio to that as well. Mateus Reis, you could probably put into that category. Daniel Braganza, you can probably put into that category as well. These players, not necessarily in the starting lineup, but who all played that part. Maybe, Brian, you can even add a player like Paulinho into that, because he didn't start every game. But this is what I mean. You know, I think when they won the league in 2020, it felt like they had a starting 11 that was built to win games. But after that, they lacked some depth. There has been a really, really good depth throughout this Sporting team, and that's made a huge difference and allowed them to go much deeper into this competition in the best form that they can.
Yeah, they've very much the bottom level of the club has, over the since they won the league, has got higher and higher, closer to the, you know, so the quality of players throughout the squad is much better. I think one category of player that I quite like, as you were sort of describing there, is like Mateus Reis, Nuno Santos, Morita, for example, players that they've signed from within the league, slightly higher age, perhaps like 25, 26, players who they're not sort of relying on getting that big money move. They're relying on them to have a really solid player play, be a squad player, or it's just like coming in out of the team, but just have that slightly, that higher standard. And so they perhaps don't have to rely so much on youth players. And that's really, really worked. I mean, Morita for me has been one of the, you know, I think Hjulmand and Morita actually, Albert, is one of those key areas. I think, like you say, the Hjulmand signing, Gyökeres is an obvious, incredible standout signing. Hjulmand seems so smart now, having seen the season play out, because the way he worked with Morita, you know, I don't know if it's him making Morita better, but whether they just complement each other so well. But, you know, Morita's just looked like a fantastic, you know, midfielder. It's just been, yeah, mm-hmm. it's really smart business. And then, you know, wasn't 20 million their record fee for Paulinho? And then, like you said, they've spent that twice in this season. So yeah, it was good, really, really good business.
I got some interesting intel from Tom Cundet from Portugal.net about the Heuermann signing. Really interesting because apparently Amorim was saying that Heuermann was his player of the season in the Sporting team, and that Heuermann was had played better than he ever thought he would. And apparently, Heuermann wasn't an Amorim signing at all. In fact, Amorim needed convincing multiple times. Apparently, the scouting team brought Heuermann to the table three times before Amorim was convinced to sign him. So, nice. I mean, that's a it's nice to know that because, you know, it's good to give credit where it's due, you know, and it's good to know that Sporting have got a really good team behind the scenes, which is not just not just Ruben Amorim. Shall we rattle through some standout players? Because there's obviously quite a few. Victor Gyökeres, arguably the player of the season, 29 goals, 10 assists. Pedro Gonçalves, overlooked for the Portugal national team, but got 11 goals and 12 assists in the league. Trincão, 9 goals, 6 assists. And that's from only 18 starts as well. So that's interesting. But yeah, a few other players. I mean, Sebastián Coates as well, who wins his second title as Sporting captain and I think really cements his place in Sporting folklore with another really, really good season. A season where a lot of young players stood out, a lot of star signings stood out, but Coates, the captain of that side who's been there for so many years, still marshalling the defence. Nuno Sanches on the left wing back, he's made that position his own. He's one of the best players in that position, arguably in the world. The way he plays is absolutely fantastic. And the player I like, Barney, Jenny Cattamo, who has come in at, I guess he's kind of a right wing back. He's basically a right winger. He was in my team in the season at right back. But yeah, just another player who's had such a good season. But, you know, you could just name 10, 15 players who you could consider standouts for Sporting this season. That's how good it's been.
Yeah, and every time a player came into the team, you know, they performed, and that's what helped them have this sort of ruthlessness throughout the whole season. The consistency was the fact that Amorim was able to rotate much more freer than he has done in previous seasons. Backline's a prime example. I mean, on Coates, because I think that he's I'd written him off around this time last season. I thought he was done. But he's done amazingly to get himself back to a level and be such a key player to them, especially with the young centre-backs around them. You know, Diamande and Asio and Quaresma came in. All of those centre-backs actually have been so good.
Like Saint-Just as well when he's been
when
fit.
When Saint-Just has been fit, he's a, you know, brilliant. Top draw. And then also just to go back to Jenny Cattamo as well, because I know I mentioned Quaresma as the sort of young player to highlight what Aaron's done, but no, Jenny Cattamo is the, you know, is the prime example. Different position, never really played that before. Big moment in a big game against Benfica. You know, how key that game was actually, you know, at that point in the season, at that point in time. Huge moment. And, you know, this guy's just come in under the guidance of Amorim and popped up with a really important goal. And Pedro Gonçalves as well, just you mentioned there, I think he could become one of these sort of players like Nuno Santos perhaps, or Mateus Reis, who, you know, might not ever get that big move, but it's so vital because, you know, the level they bring to this league is top level. And, you know, maybe he's a bit unfortunate to miss out on the national squad, but like if his profile doesn't get much bigger, that's not necessarily a bad thing for Sporting, because, you know,
not at all.
Hell of a player is really, and he played almost every game, didn't he? In midfield, in the wings, you know, really important player for Amorim, actually. He does a really good job.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we move on, Barney, I look at what next season might hold. For me, I think the key thing is whether they keep Amorim and or Victor Gyökeres. I think those are probably the two most important factors to their league success this year. Keep both, and I think they're favourites for the league again. Keep one, and I think probably still the same. But I think the thing for me is, going back to what I was saying about the signing of Heuermann, even if a key player leaves the season, I think what this season has demonstrated is that the setup behind the scenes and upstairs at Sporting is clearly in a very good place. They're able to make good signings. And from what the Verandas has been saying this week, suggesting that Ruben Amorim is staying, if they can keep Amorim and continue to sign players in the way that they have, it's very, very good signs for Sporting because it's a setup that's really working at the moment.
Yeah, and as it was another tiny, well, it's not good to remember now that, you know, they're not on the financial levels of Benfica, or necessarily Porto. That, you know, that they have to be smarter in their transfer window. They have to, you know, rely on good coaching and good management, and that's what they've got in Amorim, and obviously great signing. I mean, I know Gyökeres, I've already seen rumors about that Greek striker. I've forgotten his name, sorry, but you know, there's always they obviously will have plans in place. I feel like Amorim's the bigger loss of the two. I think you know, he's really built a team here, and it's very much under his style. And yeah, it's he's had a great season. He might deserve a move, but I'm also coming around to the thinking that they might stay a little bit longer.
Well, we'll see. It'll be an interesting summer. Well, let's move on to our next team, Barney, and second placed Benfica, who ended the season with 80 points, 77 goals scored, 10 points behind the league winners, Sporting. Last season, Barney, they won the league with 87 points. That's three less than Sporting this year. When they won the league in 2019, they got 87 points again. In 2017, the last time they won the league before that, they won with 82 points. I'm only putting those out just to kind of give an indication of how good Sporting's win was compared to other recent league winners. I think, Barney, where I'm at with Benfica is that I think there's probably a slight disparity between quite how unhappy Benfica fans are and how bad the season actually was. Of course, we do need to add really important context, which is that Benfica won zero silverware this year out of a possible four trophies. That is quite rare, and I think a lot of fans would consider that unacceptable. And I would agree with them. Not being able to even take home a cup is probably a real disappointment. They ended the season with that relationship between the manager Roger Schmidt and the fans almost completely broken. I don't know if that relationship is even repairable at this stage. But equally, with no indication yet, although it could change, of course, in the next couple of weeks, that Roger Schmidt will be asked to leave by Rui Costa. It's fair to say, of course, overall, that Benfica's season was a disappointment. You know, when they don't win the league, anytime they don't win the league, it's a disappointment, really, from their perspective. But I do think that perhaps there probably is a gap between quite how upset and quite how furious the fans are and how bad the season has actually been, just because they would have had to get 91 points to win the league this season. That's a really, really tough ask. I appreciate being 10 points behind the leaders at the end of the season is not great, but getting 91 points, I think at a certain point, you have to say, well, the other team were just better.
Yeah, this is the sort of conundrum, isn't it, with Benfica this year? Because, like, yeah, it's, and Schmidt said it himself, didn't he, that, you know, like, they have to get a records point still to have beaten this Sporting team, and they were pretty close right until the end. I was trying to compare last season to this season and what's changed so much, and I look at Di Maria, right, and as listeners will know, I've struggled a little bit with Di Maria this year because on one hand he's been vitally important, but I think he's emblematic of a shift in Benfica this year. If you look at it like this, so last season João Mário was playing on that sort of right attacking mid role, right? And this year we've had Di Maria, and I've toyed with the idea about what are you losing, gaining with Di Maria. Obviously, you're getting goals and assists, and his numbers have been great, but then are you losing a bit defensively? I think that is the case. You lose a bit of defensive work. You lose a bit of tactical, not necessarily know-how, but a player who will implement your tactical vision. And perhaps the biggest loss with Di Maria coming in is the loss of power. You know, we saw Di Maria at one point in the season sort of get quite disgruntled at the fact he was being subbed off, and since then we never see Di Maria subbed off, you know. And then what does that mean? It means other players are having to be sacrificed, other players are having to be played out of decision, other players are having to be subbed, and sort of can, you know, continue for, like Because when we look at, and also looking at last season, you know, but I think a lot at, most people now are like highlighting Grimaldo and Gonçalo Ramos are huge losses to this team. You know, left back and the striking position have been key areas that they haven't been able to improve well enough. But I think digging a little bit deeper into that, when you think of that team with Grimaldo and Ramos, great, brilliant players, but that whole team that won last year, there was no superstar like Di Maria. You know, maybe Enzo Fernandez was getting a bit diva-ish when he sort of forced that move to Chelsea. But then, you know, who came in? Chiquinho, like a reliable squad player who just kept his head down and put in some good performances. I'm not laying all the blame at Di Maria's door for this, because, like I say, he has been probably their best player. But, you know, when you look at the other players, like the likes of Koshu and Cabral, and how the dynamics changed with them. You know, Cabral had that incident with the receiving criticism of fans and sort of putting the middle finger up, Kotchu going to the press complaining about the position he's played in. This sort of all these little things bled into Schmidt's aura of a manager, you could say. Like, it felt like last year when he came, he was a breath of fresh air. Like a new professionalism was brought to Benfica, sort of a new focus, right? But with all these little things going on amongst the squad, I felt like that's been the shift, is that there's been too many imbalances. It hasn't felt quite as a cohesive unit. Players have been upset. You know, fans have been upset. Schmidt's become upset. And that, you know, it's just sort of, because then if you look, like we said at the beginning of this conversation, you know, they did get records points total. But if we're looking at the key points of this season, which have led to the negativity around, it's been moments of sloppiness. You know, moments of you just poor decision making. I don't know if you agree with that, Albert, because I'm drawing a lot from, I'm pulling out a lot from that, like of what I'm perceiving, and I'm not sure if other people do the same, but I do think that has been, for me, one of the shifts this season has been that the dynamics from Benfica, obviously, and I think that carries a lot with teams in this league.
Well, my opinion on Benfica's season is that it all comes down to poor squad planning in the summer and the signings. I think that is the root of all of their problems. And I think it manifests itself in a few ways. One being that Roger Schmidt has not been able to play the way that he wants to play this season, and not been able to play the way that won them the league in the previous season. This is a really important point, I think, to make on Roger Schmidt, because a lot of Benfica fans want Roger Schmidt to leave. And I think if Roger Schmidt leaves, it's only because the relationship between him and the fans is broken down and is irreparable. I personally don't think you need to sack Roger Schmidt, because I don't think Benfica didn't win the league because of Roger Schmidt's management. Now, Roger Schmidt has already proved that he can win the Primeira Liga with Benfica, right? If Roger Schmidt was like a new signing from Europe this summer, this year, excuse me, and this was his first season and this was how it had gone, I would probably say, fair enough, they tried it, let's move on. But he's already shown that he can win the league with Benfica if he has the squad to play the way that he wants to play. This is why I bring it back to the summer and how they built a squad in the summer. We talk a lot about left back and striker as the two positions that they failed to replace properly. Now, left back is different because they had a kind of freak player in Grimaldo who was more than just a left back. He was a playmaker. He was an attacking threat. He scored free kicks and stuff. They actually messed that up by not even just signing a solid left back. That's all they needed to do, really, was sign a solid left back who was able to contribute to the team. I actually think the Gonçalo Ramos replacement was the worst lack of replacement. When you look at Gonçalo Ramos and you think, what does he offer a team other than kind of being a poacher and heading the ball? He leads from the front and he presses from the front, and that's how Roger Schmidt wants to play. And if you look at the teams that Roger Schmidt was lining up with, he often wasn't starting a striker. But when he did, it was either he was going with Tengstedt, and people were asking, why is he starting Tengstedt? It's because he thought Tengstedt would press more than Artur Cabral. But that front four that he was playing this season was basically Angel Di Maria, who has a load of great quality but will not press. Cabral won't press. João Mário in the attacking midfield, who doesn't really press either. And then Rafa. So he's not really got the team to play the way that he wants to play. And I think that's why we saw so many of the issues that we've moaned about this season, about why is he picking certain players over others? Why is he not playing this player in that position? And I think that is the reason why Benfica did not win the league the season, was because they did not have a squad that matched the way the manager wanted to play. And that caused all sorts of problems, like players not playing in their position and complaining, players complaining when they were subbed off, the fans complaining when the manager made decisions that they didn't understand in terms of squad selection. So for me, that's where it all boils down to, in terms of the issues that they've had this season and the reasons that they've not won the league. Of course, there were positives, though, Barney, that we can look at, like, for example, the emergence of João Neves, which I think was a huge bonus to the team, because he'll either go on to become a Benfica legend and contribute to the team in years to come, or become the next big sale for the club, which I think will benefit them a lot. There were good individual seasons for players like Trubin, who I thought had a very good year. I think Antonio Silva had a good year. Alzinez as well had a good year. João Neves, like I said. I actually think Rafa and Di Maria had good individual seasons, although, like I said, I think they perhaps didn't contribute to the team in the way that Roger Schmidt would have liked. But yeah, ultimately, I think, it was an underwhelming season, and I've outlined the reasons why. I think the summer was a poor one. If they are going to keep Roger Schmidt, they have to back him. They have to get him the players that he wants. They have to get his signings in. And I do think he's already proved that if they do that, then he will win them the league title, as he has already done.
Yeah, I think it's important to highlight the positives of Benfica. I like those players you mentioned there. Just a bit more on João Neves. I think, one, Roger Schmidt deserves a lot of credit for the way he's brought him through. He's unbelievable, actually. You know, I think he's just huge. And him and Antonio Silva, you know, two young players being key players in that team. I thought, Di Maria has been so good to watch as well. I made quite a big point at the beginning there, but, you know, he is still an incredible player, and he's been really important for Benfica. I think Rafa had a Rafa season to sort of see himself off. I think he deserved that. But and Alzinez has been really good as well. We're talking about, Roger Schmidt player. Alzinez is a Roger Schmidt player, like, through and through. Like, he is just like the emblem of that. It's all about the disappointing European performances, perhaps, and the lack of silverware. The points total is pretty good, and sometimes I go, if from an outsider looking, they'd be, that's all right, actually. And you know, we shouldn't forget that, but then, yeah, it's, I think that's the thing about Benfica, there's just so many eyes on them, so many people talking about, so many opinions bounded about. That is the nature of Benfica, though. So, you know, if Schmidt's got to be able to deal with that. I haven't liked the way he's dealt with the fans, but then maybe he needs a little bit of slack as well for the job he's done. I don't know. I think it's going to be exciting. They're going to be exciting next season, that's for sure. I think there will be more. They've got loads of players that they signed that haven't really featured, like the Argentinian guys, Presciani and Roselia. Di Maria might go. We never know. There's always been talk about that season. So, yeah. A weird one for Benfica this season. It's been fun to watch, fun to follow the journey.
And look, I'll just go back to what I said. If they're going to succeed next season and they're going to keep Roger Schmidt, they've got to back him and make his signings, because we know that Benfica make their own signings, you know, and I think Marcus Leonardo is probably that type of signings. You know, they scout South America, they bring these young players in. If they want a manager who's just going to work with the squad that they're given, then fine, get that manager in. But if they're going to keep Roger Schmidt, then I think they need to get him the signings that he wants if they're going to be successful. All right, let's talk about Porto, Barney. Third place they finished the season with 72 points, 18 points behind league leaders Sporting. They will be playing Europa League football next year. They scored 63 goals. A season where they were out of the title race quite far before the season really ended, which was disappointing for them perspective. They do still, of course, have a chance of winning the Taça de Portugal final, which would be a good end to a pretty poor season. They did well in the Champions League group, as they seem to always do. They did well against Arsenal in the round of 16 in the Champions League, unlucky to go out on penalties. But there have been issues this season as the team has underperformed in the league. I have to say, I don't think there's too many exciting players in that side at the moment. And of course, they end the season with very big question marks over what is going to happen in the summer with a new president, André Villas-Boas, in charge. Similarly to Benfica Bayern, I think it's hard to say anything other than this season has been an underachievement.
Yeah, they've been so far off the mark this year. It's been a lot of factors. I think, you know, for a while, Contrasau has been holding Porto together and getting players to outperform. I think this season we probably saw the end of that. As you said, there wasn't many outstanding performances. My biggest word for Porto this year is consistency. When you think of Contrasau's like successful teams, you know, it's you know the lineup. You get the work, the intensity, and a baseline quality of performance, and you get results. But there's been no consistency this season from the team. You know, if you look at the number of centre-back partnerships they've gone with, Pepe, Otavio, Marcano, Z Pedro got called up from the B team. They just, you know, the amount of times he's had to tweak that has caused an issue. I think the Taremi situation, you know, he obviously at the start of the season he obviously wasn't as consistent, and which is the same because he was Mr. Consistent for Porto over the last few seasons. You know, you knew you were going to get close to 20 goals and a few assists as well. And even the midfield, you know, it took Contrasau a while to settle on that midfield and eventually settle on that formation with Evan Nilsson as lone striker, Pepe behind him, and Chico Contrasau. Because that was when they're at their best, that moment where Contrasau found his team, settled on Varela and Gonzalez in midfield, had Galeno on the left, Contrasau on the right, Pepe behind Evan Nilsson. That was them at their best. You know, think of that performance against Arsenal. You know, I guess this is my point, is that still felt like a bit of a patch of consistency. Think of, you know, Contrasau took him so long to get to that level on that right wing, where we were sort of see some goals and assists, but it sort of drifted off. It just all felt short-lived, that, you know, and then they just got back to sort of dropping points in the league. And we've talked a lot about this season, you know, the way Porto have handled themselves, you know, as a whole, and talking about refereeing decisions. I don't want to really talk too much more about that because, you know, I don't really enjoy it. But I guess, you know, that is the thing, is there were so many inconsistencies on the pitch. It was, and Contrasau, you know, as he'd been spinning all these plates for so long, you know, keeping a Porto playing at a decent enough standard to get into the Champions League and fight for title after title. And then it just felt like it got all a bit too much, and everything had come home to roost. You know, the squad was not good enough this season. I think this will be Contrasau's last season. It feels a shame that he's going off on such a bad note, because he's been so good for in Portugal for so long, like an incredible manager. I love that game against Arsenal. That was like a real high point for me. It just reminded me of what we know Contrasau to be. But that was, like I said, those sort of performances were, we didn't get enough of them this season, and they've had a real poor year.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair, and I agree with you. I will always love and back Sergio Contrasau. I think he's a very good manager, but I think this season has probably just been one season too far. He's been too hot-headed. He's been too erratic at Porto, probably for a little while now, actually, and does feel like the end of his time at the club, especially with the new president, and apparently Jorge Costa is going to be coming in as director of football, and I don't think him and Sergio Contrasau have a great relationship. So, we'll see. We'll see what transpires over the summer. I do think that it wasn't a good enough transfer window in the summer for them, Barney. I mean, when you look at the summer signings that they made and whether they were good enough, obviously they signed Alan Varela, who I think was a good player and didn't really set the league alight, but I think showed that he could be a very good player for Porto and probably could have a better season next year. They signed Nico Gonzalez to play alongside him in midfield. And I think, again, similarly, didn't exactly set the league alight, but looked like he could be a very useful player for them. in the summer, they also signed Ivan Jaime, Fran Navarro, Francisco Conceição came back, and Jorge Sanchez from Ajax. Francisco Conceição had an excellent season, of course, but Ivan Jaime, Fran Navarro, Jorge Sanchez, all players that I think you have to say were not successful signings at all. And Otavio, who they brought in the winter, I think looked good and was a much needed addition. I just think the outcasting of players is again a problem for me, Barney. You know, obviously David Carmo went on loan to Olympiacos. He was joined by Fran Navarro. Even Jaime was frozen out. Jorge Sanchez was frozen out towards the end of the season. I think it's a problem because, you know, these are players that they've signed to improve the team and they're not really being given a chance. And it's like, if Sergio Conceição is freezing these players out, who is signing them? I think that's a problem. So I think that's the unfortunate issue with Porto, is just that there were too many negatives compared to positives. There were positives though. Like I said, Chico Conceição had a fantastic season, I thought, and his return and that return being made permanent is a real, real positive. He was called up to the Portugal national team and I think he will make an impact at Porto next season as well. He got 5 goals and 4 assists this season, very good. I thought Galeno was pretty good this season as well. 9 goals in the league, 7 assists, very good. And Evan Nilsson, who wasn't the league's top scorer, but got 13 goals and managed to replace Taremi pretty well. So, you know, there were good aspects to the season. There were good wins. There were a lot of poor results, though. There were a lot of games that they shouldn't have lost. And I remember the thing I was talking about a lot, Barney, was just that their mindset wasn't great and they were reacting badly to games which weren't going their way too much this season. So, yeah, for me, that's where I'm at with Porto. You know, obviously finishing third and playing Europa League football is not as bad as it could have been, considering that there was a point a few games ago where it was possible that Braga and even Vitória could overtake them. So I think finishing third, getting Europa League football, at least it means they can make some signings who want to play in Europe. But I think there will be changes over the summer. And I think we need to see a new direction in management and a new direction in terms of signings as well. So I think it's going to be a big summer.
Feels like they might be going back to sort of a situation where Sporting found themselves just when they appointed Amorim, sort of having to rebuild up like from scratch again after everything they've gone through. Now, I think that, yeah, it'd be very interesting how Porto move on in the next few years. Although I think a lot of those players that you mentioned who are outcasted, those are good players in there. So they do have some quality. And then we saw some of the young players towards the end of the season as well get a few minutes and look impressive as well. So yeah, the only player I'd add to your list of positives, Albert, was Otavio, who they signed in January from Famalicão. Mm-hmm. He came in and was excellent and really good centre-back. I think it's all about the future, though. I think the presidential elections feel monumental, really, and sort of, you know, Pinto da Costa was there for so long, with end of an era, you know, but they needed that change. And yeah, it's exciting to see what will come from that.
Mm. All right, let's talk about Braga in fourth place, Barney. They finished the season with 68 points. They were 4 points away from finishing third, 12 points away from Benfica in second, and 22 points off the top spot. They scored 71 goals, 8 more than Porto, but 50 goals conceded was the worst by far out of any of the top six clubs. They won the Taça da Liga in January, which was a very important piece of silverware for them. They played Champions League football this season, although understandably the group stage didn't go the way they would have wanted, but it was a tough group, which included Napoli and Real Madrid. I think it probably was a disappointment that they lost the Europa League playoff against Karabag. They probably should have won that game. I think they were favourites in that. Look, whilst there's always disappointment when they don't crack the top four, especially as we saw in our preseason predictions, you know, there was a lot of hype around them with their January signings, their summer signings, excuse me. They did get close, only a few points away. They played Champions League football. They won a domestic trophy. So I think it's far from a disastrous season. I think in general, it's probably an overall positive season.
Yeah, it's all about perspective, isn't it? And you know, like you say, the silverware was important. I don't like the messiness around after Jorge leaving. That felt like coming at like midway through the season. It just felt a bit messy. Him just taking a job in Brazil and how that panned out. I also, you know, really didn't like this. When you look at their business as a whole, you know, we were very excited at the beginning of the window, but that in hindsight now, a lot of those signings haven't paid off. And then for them to sell Al Mizrati as well felt like a really big move. Like you know, the Mizrati move came about, and then Arthur George was gone. It just felt, you know, big things were leaving, and that really did disrupt them. Ricardo Horta being out for a while as well really didn't help them as well. So yeah, it's we were so excited about the way they finished last season, and that was a really strong performance. They kept it close to Porto this season, but it doesn't feel like they've progressed, which I think is the main thing, because they had spent some money, and obviously Europe was a fail. Like, you know, they should have done better against Carabao. There's no doubt about that. I really like Roger coming through the second half of the season. Although another messy thing coming out of that is that he seems to not be signing a new contract, and so then he gets dropped out of the team. Alvajal as well, sorry, you know, a great player for them this year, you know, really came on leaps and bounds, but then, you know, announcing his move midway through the season as well, just another, they just, you know, it seems to be their own worst enemy in terms of these departures and the way they were handling all of that. So it really felt like I'd say a wasted opportunity, considering how well they'd done last season and how it looked like they were setting themselves up for this year. But then, you know, Daniel Sousa coming in from Aruca is exciting. So we'll have to see what that brings. But yeah, it's seeing them in fourth, you know, like I said, with Sporting, you know, we shouldn't forget the size of this club compared to the big three. So although we do get excited and sort of wish them into breaking into that, you know, they are far smaller in terms of their financial ability. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there was just quite a lot of messiness around them this season. I think that has held them back. You know, obviously you can speculate, but I wonder if they'd kept Arthur George until the end of the season and kept Ali Amrabat until the end of the season. You know, they only finished 4 points behind Porto. How many points would they have got if they'd kept those two characters around the club for the rest of the season, you know? But then again, is finishing third that much different to finishing fourth? I mean, they've got a Europa League qualifier to play, which could be potentially tricky. They don't go straight into the group stage, but
it's whatever it is next year.
Well, quite exactly. But I mean, I think losing Amrabat was a big issue for me. The manager situation was unfortunate, but also it's not just off-field issues. You know, they conceded too many goals, Barney. As I, you know, their defense was a problem all season, even when Ali Amrabat was in the team, even when Arthur George was there, their defense was a problem all season. And I think part of that perhaps comes down to too many of the signings not quite working. I'm thinking about Jose Font, in that he was meant to come in and help shore up defence and he didn't. Nyakate, a player that they signed on a permanent after a successful loan, wasn't really able to replicate his form from previous season. Players like Ronnie Lopes, who didn't really make an impact in the way that we thought they might. So, you know, there was a lot of optimism at the beginning of the season. It didn't live up to expectations, but despite that, they've still had some success and are in a pretty good place. And I think the prospect of Daniel Sousa, one of the most exciting managers from Arouca this season coming in, is a really exciting prospect. So in that sense, next season does seem like a more exciting proposition.
Yeah, and other positives, I would say, like some Zalazar, he's turned out to be a good signing. He's been good for them. I quite like Vita Cavalier when he did play. I think he's a solid player. Perhaps he doesn't raise the level, but he had some good games when we watched him, particularly in their cup run. And Gian Moutinho as well is I think that's proved to be a good one. But yeah, Zalazar is a standout for me, and I'm excited to see him next season, perhaps in a slightly more advanced role.
And of course, Simon Banza, Barney, 21 goals. We didn't mention him, 21 goals in 28 games. You know, he only missed out a few games from the African Cup of Nations. Maybe he would have broken 25 goals if he'd played, hadn't been away at AFCON. So
yeah, maybe
his most successful career as a player by far. You know, one thing we used to talk about him, inconsistency. but he was really, really consistent. So yeah, fantastic season. And you know, without his goals, they would have been much further behind.
Maybe that's a key point of the season for Braga, actually losing him to AFCON and you know, Abraoui's coming in, felt like a slightly less capable than when Banz was in the team. They looked quite different, and yeah, maybe that's a key point, because that's around the time of Musrati departing, and then Arthur George as well. It's just, yeah, that was a bad few months for Braga.